My name's Andy Gordon, and I'm from the UK, the West Country, but I've been in New Zealand now on the South Island here for over 10 years. Yeah, I guess I'm the politics show ears and eyes on the ground here in the Pacific region. And yeah, this week I think it's a very interesting development. I mean, I've spoke before on this show about how New Zealand is, kind of a lapdog for America. They're kind of another state of America. They've been bought in a way. And I think it shows it this week because we've had Winston Peters, our foreign affairs minister at the UN. And, he's announced that New Zealand is not going to recognize the state of Palestine, which doesn't sound like much on the surface, but, this is definitely something that America and Israel love, and obviously they've praised New Zealand for this, but lots of other countries around the world have sort of said, it's a pretty shameful day for New Zealand.
But what about
And
New Zealanders themselves? Is there quite a lot of activism going on there on this sort of humanitarian Gaza issue?
definitely, there's a lot of people who don't agree with that decision and are pretty embarrassed, to be part of New Zealand with a decision like that, but at the same time, though, I think there is a kind of religious aspect to this as well, and New Zealand is quite a religious country, and even it shows in our government. Winston Peters himself is a quite devout Christian, our foreign affairs minister, and Christopher Luxon, our prime minister, is a evangelical Christian and belongs to the Upper Room Church, which is kind of evangelical church which stretches across the world. And anyone who knows anything about America, a lot of the support for Israel is coming from the evangelical Christians, these kind of influences are having an effect on their decisions they're making in the politics and geopolitical sort of realm, And, this is what New Zealand's become, is they are what's sort of known as a force multiplier. And this is an idea, originally from Henry Kissinger. He came up with this idea where you need to legitimize ideas and political ideas. You need other countries to back you up. And we've seen it time and time again now. When the UK and America went to sort of war with Yemen with the Houthi rebels, last year or the year before, New Zealand were that force multiplier. They got the request from America and they sent a token number of Defence Force personnel to fight the Yemenis, and I think the number is absolutely ridiculous. They sent about five or six personnel to serve on a US ship, but geopolitically, this legitimizes the decisions made by the UK and America, and this is kind of what's going on now. Chris Luxon came out the day after and said, this is a wholly independent decision. He's very quick to say that, but I don't really buy that. The other thing he said was, recognizing the state of Palestine would sort of make the situation worse, which I don't believe at all. I think Macron was the first to recognize the state of Palestine in France, and obviously the UK with Starmer followed suit. And I think those two, they've got information and they kind of know information that we won't have. They've got their ear to the ground and they've got information what the plan is with probably Palestine. And I think they're trying to, by declaring and recognizing the state of Palestine, they're trying to speed up the process a little bit because they probably know what's coming. And Israel themselves say that they're going to hand over Palestine to Arab forces, and I think a lot of people are scratching their head at what that actually means. But I saw a story brilliant story by Channel 4 News in the UK about 6 months ago, and they've uncovered that Israel has got some of these Bedouin tribes on the payroll in Palestine. And I think some of the leaders of these Bedouin tribes you could be looking at the future sort of leaders of Palestine. And at the moment, since the war started, Israel have been using those Bedouin tribes to hijack food convoys, and they've been stealing those trucks with food on. And that Bedouin tribe, there's one of them that's about 300 men strong, and they're operating a black market to sell that food back to Palestinians, you know. And they're most definitely on the payroll of Israel. Channel 4 News revealed that their main base is in Israel-controlled territory in Palestine, you know. So I think this is where we're heading, Tony.
Well, it's, I mean, fascinating to contrast that with or see parallels with the infiltration by the police of the peace convoy, traveller convoy in the 1980s here in the UK. The idea was, let's send in agents to infiltrate, destabilise, not only to surveil the traveller peace convoy, which was turning up in its hundreds at various protest air bases and the American air bases and things like this, Molesworth, Menwith. I don't know. I'm not sure actually if they went to Menwith Hill, but several of these. And the idea is that the travellers, the sort of people who are the marginalised in society, are perfect to infiltrate because it makes it look as if this is the real zeitgeist of the day. Anyway, so but also. We've got this business at the UN with the New Zealand government. I mean, what do you think is do you think there's any sort of backlash within New Zealand about them not recognising Palestine? Because of course, in many people here in Britain have been pointing out that it's okay. It's taken you 50 years to recognise Palestine, but you're or more, but you're recognizing now a completely smashed to pieces state that hardly exists in the first place now.
Yeah, well, there's definitely backlash in New Zealand. You know, there's a lot of pro-Palestine supporters here, and you know, there's been decent sized protests, and you know, there's been protests since the start of the war here, you know. So and you know, the news here has done quite a good job, and they've interviewed a lot of people who are protesting about the you know, that decision, and a lot of people here are appalled. But like I say, there's a fraction, you know, evangelical Christians, and even within the Catholic Church, I think there's quite large support on the right for Israel. So, and one thing I'd point people towards is there's a great documentary on Al Jazeera called Boycott, and in that, they go to a Israeli journalist who's he lays it all out how Israel have kind of been sending money to a lot of these evangelical churches, and you know, and this is to get their message across that to make the evangelical Christians believe that, you know, they believe that Israel and Israelis are chosen people by God and all the rest of it, you know. So
Well, there is a certain hypocrisy to this, if not a massive hypocrisy, in that should the state of Israel start to do what they want to do, which is to reinstitute sacrifices at a rebuilt temple in Jerusalem, this of course flies in the face, totally flies in the face of Christianity. So the idea is Christ is the final sacrifice, but you're going to actually try and reverse all that and start doing animal sacrifices again. So there's, I think Scott Ritter has pointed out also that, in a way, the American idea is that we're going to sort of encourage the Jews to do this so that they all go to hell. I mean, there is all sorts of weird stuff in this, but one of the weirdest, Andy, and maybe you can throw a bit of light on this. is the big Tommy Robinson rally here a couple of weeks ago, supposedly about free speech, but several people that came to speak from other parts of the world, including from the UK, Andrew Bridgen, the former MP, who's been a big campaigner for free speech around COVID, etc., were told, no, you can't speak. Right? So how about that for a free speech rally? Instead, they put this guy called Brian Tamaki from something called Destiny Church. He's a supposedly a Maori Christian church to do a haka, which seems a bit peculiar for a Christian church to be doing these Maori rituals. But what about him? Because he's another Christian Zionist, it turns out. Their church is a Christian Zionist church. Plenty of money. I'm not sure quite where it comes from. But this
Well,
is,
I
you
think.
know, one of the big things that we've seen to do in New Zealand over here in the last few months is this bizarre ceremony at the Tommy Robinson rally.
Brian Tamaki, I mean, it's very interesting because, like you said, he was at that protest. And, when I saw that, I thought, well, what's he doing there? And then, had a sort of moment of clarity where the next moment on the big screen is sort of Elon Musk's face, and it kind of all made sense because I think that MAGA movement, Elon Musk and others are trying to make that a worldwide movement, with Tommy Robinson, and here in New Zealand, definitely, I think with that Brian Tamaki and his Destiny Church, I mean the money they've got is actually unbelievable, and they're running protests in Auckland and Wellington, and they will get 20,000 odd people there. And what they're protesting against is the same things as what Tony Robinson's, protesting against is immigration is one of the big ones, which New Zealand seems very strange because New Zealand doesn't really have a problem with immigration, and like in America, obviously there's a big immigration thing with the MAGA movement. So, and that's going on around Europe. I think Elon Musk has been proved that he's got a right wing government that he's sort of put in place in some of the South American countries now. Argentina's one, and I think across Europe, you've got Austria and Italy, and I think there is a sort of worldwide sort of movement there. Brian Tamaki. The reason I say he's well funded, he'll turn up at these protests with all his Maori crew. They've all got brand new Harley Davidsons. He might be in a Aston Martin, or a Ferrari, and he's definitely got some money. And how much does it cost to fly from New Zealand, 20 Maoris to London, put them up in a hotel? You're talking about 50 odd thousand dollars, I'd say, to sort of fund that. So there's definitely money there. And it's a very strange church. I mean, he's evangelical, sort of Christian Zionist sort of church, and they all dress in black. He preaches in black. He wears like black jeans, black shirt, a bit like Elon Musk himself.
Well, it's interesting you mention this, wearing black. I see this all the time. There is this idea of a sort of in joke within the media. Ah, right, yes, he's one of us, because they've got their black shirt on, their black t-shirt. Now, I'm not saying everyone that wears black on television is or gets photographed wearing black is in some little cult or whatever, but this is certainly something I've heard. I remember overhearing this sort of thing within the journalist union and actually in broadcasting. A sort of little, it's like they wink at each other. Yeah, I'm in black again today. So this is something that the public probably don't have no idea of, but there is this. This is out there. Wearing black is a way of signalling your treachery, really, towards the viewers and the listeners, and obviously to the congregation who are coming along to the church.
There is such a thing as people believe in this sort of color therapy, don't they? And the colors you wear attract certain energies and so on. And normally church, you normally go for a white or light colors, red or so on, but black is more a color of witches and so on, aren't they? And vampires. So yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, it's the color of night. Yeah, this is the old idea, is we like to do things in the dark. in the darkness. This is how we think this is cool. Anyway, I just wonder if there's anything you wanted to add about national or international politics in New Zealand. Obviously, you're in a bit of the shadow of both America and China there, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we had an interesting incident actually, probably 2 months ago, where the new FBI director Patel came to New Zealand to open an FBI office in Wellington. And this is what I mean when, the states have got their claws into New Zealand, because I mean, I can't see what reason you'd need an FBI office in New Zealand for.
Well, because let's just clarify, the FBI is the United States' domestic intelligence service, a bit like Britain's
Exactly.
MI5.
Yeah.
And so they shouldn't be there. They shouldn't be operating abroad. I
No.
mean, obviously you can have a foreign intelligence service, the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yeah.
That would be kind of normal to have their desk within the US Embassy in Wellington, but certainly not the FBI. What are they? It's like having MI5 in Moscow. I mean, they're not even allowed to operate abroad.
That's right. Yeah. And in his speech, Patel said, they are there to counter China's influence in the South Pacific. And I've spoken before to you about how America would love to get a war going on between China and Australia, New Zealand, or whoever, in the Pacific here. And I think that upset a few New Zealanders. And all the top brass were there, the top police commissioners, the intelligence services of New Zealand were there. And another funny thing that did make the news was he presented them all these top cops and intelligence people, he presented them with a 3D printed gun, handgun, which afterwards it came out was completely illegal, this type of gun in New Zealand, unless you had a special license. So how he brought those over to New Zealand is sort of beyond, they're meant to be security agencies or whatever, and they've let this guy in with half a dozen guns,
Well, he might maybe a diplomatic bag or something, but then of
Could
course,
be.
that's a bit naughty, him smuggling illegal stuff in through there. Anyway, it's funny that he obviously didn't know. The guy's obviously a little bit dim, or he's badly advised that he's getting this
Yeah.
stuff out in public that's actually against the law in New Zealand. Well, well done for New Zealanders for pointing that out.
Yeah, no, good on the police, because they were the ones that came out and said, we're going to have to destroy those weapons. And obviously some journalists picked up on that, and it made a few headlines, which is quite funny. But the thing about these comments about China, that just shows the sort of direction that America wants to take New Zealand, I think. And New Zealand's being punished ever since the incident with the warship that was denied, the American warship that was denied harbour in New Zealand back in the 80s. Since then, New Zealand's one of the only countries, definitely in the Five Eyes Partnership and Western countries, that do not have a free trade agreement to this day with America. Just quickly on that incident with the warship, there's a really interesting fact, that's little story that's come out now from Nikki Hagger, the guy that wrote Secret Power and Secret and
Well,
Lies. And
he's like the best investigative journalist. I mean, whoa, we are not worthy. I think it's Harger. It's pronounced Harger.
Harger, yeah.
Nick Harger. He did
Nikki
the
Hagger.
first articles revealing the existence of Echelon, which
Yep.
is the intelligence sharing system. Well, it's not actually about intelligence sharing so much as completely surveilling everything that goes around on the internet, checking for keywords.
Yep,
So well done,
that's right.
Nikki. But anyway, yeah, great. What's he up to?
So basically, I mean, if you read his books, you'll get a really good understanding of how the intelligence services work, I'd say, and the military. With his Hit and Run, that's another good book of his. But he came to Otago University here and did a talk. And in that talk, he revealed for the first time something about that instance back in the 80s, which is just absolutely fascinating. So what happened? was the only way he could reveal it was because the person in question was dead. So back in the 80s, when we had the Labour government, the fourth Labour government, I think it is, of David Longey, he was obviously the anti-nuclear guy, and what happened, America waited until David Longey was on a boat going out to some of these Pacific islands, because he was like really keen to see all of New Zealand's territories. And in those days, you know, you're pretty much off the radar. You're like 3 days on a boat to get to some of these islands, and it was the only way. So America waited till he was on this boat, and suddenly they started sending one of their warships towards New Zealand waters and requested to dock in New Zealand. And the guy that was left in charge, I can't remember his name now, but Deputy Prime Minister at the time, was absolutely panicking, you know. And he went straight to the intelligence services, asked, "What should I do? You know, should I refuse this warship coming in? It could be a nuclear powered warship." And he said the intelligence agencies came to his office. They handed him 50 pages of basically gobbledygook. So it gave him no help at all. He went home to his family. And he at the dinner table, he sort of confessed to his family, asking their advice. And his 17-year-old daughter sort of put her hand up and said, "I know someone that can help." And that person was someone at her college who was in the protest movement, and he was Nikki Hagger, or Hagger, however you say it. So he came round. And at that moment, he kind of broke the Official Secrets Act by telling Nikki what was going on. And it was just lucky enough that he had made a list of all the ships that could be nuclear powered. And he said, "What type of ship is it?" And he looked it up in documents and said, "Oh, it's this type of ship." He said, "That is possibly a nuclear powered ship. I'd recommend denying it entry. And recommend that they only bring Perry-class ships to New Zealand." And that's exactly what happened. So, and it's only because that deputy prime minister's died now that he sort of revealed that what happened. But I think that gives a lot of hope to some 17-year-old protest movement, you know, that things like that can happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, also, of course, it was they didn't want nuclear powered as well as nuclear, you know, because having nuclear armaments on a ship as well,
Yeah,
you
so
don't want
it's
any of this.
that's right, not just nuclear powered, it's if they can carry, if they're capable of carrying nuclear bombs. And obviously in New Zealand, they're against anything nuclear, so absolutely anything nuclear cannot come in New Zealand waters. So it does make me wonder, with Australia building these two nuclear powered submarines, you know. Think that whole AUKUS deal with Australia there is someone in the Pentagon's obviously said, you know, "How do we win a war against China?" And they've been running the computers, and they said, "Right, we need two nuclear powered submarines in the Pacific." You know, so that's my theory on why Australia is almost bankrupting themselves building these submarines, you know.
Okay, finally, and I'll put a link up to Nikki Hager. I always remember it because it rhymes. I remember hearing in New Zealand him being interviewed on the radio and saying, "No, it rhymes with lager." I thought, okay.
Well, that might be just a Kiwi accent, because I do know someone in Exeter down there with the same surname, and they definitely call it Hagger. So, but that's a West Country pronunciation, maybe.
Well, okay, but the thing is, people, different families pronounce the name differently. But anyway, look, let's not fall out over that. Finally, what about this? Do you know much about, I wonder about the idea of co-governance? Because there's this idea now, apparently, that as a way of saying sorry to the Maoris for taking over, the British flag people, you know, the government of New Zealand, are into this thing called co-governance. So the idea is that the Maoris should have a kind of equal say as well as the government in the way the country's run. I don't know if that's
Yeah,
actually
well,
happening yet, but it's certainly being talked about. And one
oh,
wonders, I mean, are the Maoris all going to be elected or appointed or what's happening? Do you know?
Yeah, well, that it's already happening, Tony. Is like if you look at a lot of the councils in New Zealand, the regional councils, they will have seats specifically for Maori. So it's already happening. Which I'm not really in favour of because they are unelected, these people. So the councillors have been elected, obviously through elections, but yet there's still seats at the table for Māori that haven't been elected,
Well,
so
I wonder if Brian Tamaki and his mates from the Destiny Church are going to suddenly pop up there.
yeah, well, they are quite extreme Māori, some of them. Brian Tamaki is Māori himself, and with their immigration, there are some hardline Māoris out there who kind of believe that there should be no white people in New Zealand at all. They're quite extreme. They don't believe in any migration, but for me, New Zealand's actually got one of the best immigration policies, if not the best immigration policy in the world. And I just think, like, when I look at the UK, is why they don't just literally copy New Zealand's immigration policy, because it is so good. It works on a points-based
Well,
system.
okay. So just take us through it briefly.
Yeah, well, it works on a points-based system, and it's always adapting. It's all computerized. So let's say you need 500 doctors in New Zealand. They will quite easily make those 500 visas available for doctors. Or if you need builders, they will make the visas available for builders, and the numbers will be limited to how many you need. And those numbers are always changing. So it's always adapting to what the need of the workforce is. And they only take experienced people, so you need, 10 years experience in the industry or whatever it is. And it all works on a points-based system. If you meet the points-based system, you can apply for that visa, and there's a good chance you're going to get it. So it's a simple and effective system. Obviously the UK's got problems with the boats coming over, which New Zealand doesn't have, but same thing there. I can't see that it's a big problem to tow those boats back to French waters and say, look, you're in a safe country, back you go, to where you just came from. I think it's the most simple question thing to sort out in the UK, but for some reason Starmer and everyone else very reluctant to do anything about it.
Well,
I mean,
look,
his it,
we're chatting as the Israelis have intercepted this flotilla of aid boats heading to Gaza, and grabbed everyone off those boats, being detained. They're being flown back out of the country, Greta Thunberg among them. So hopefully nobody's been shot and killed this time, which is what they've done on previous occasions. So it does beg the question. Why can't something be done to grab people off boats heading across the channel at the moment? It's like, I'm not saying what the Israelis are doing is good or right at all, but it's certainly a big contrast with this idea that, well, when they arrive, we'll just welcome them, give them everything they need, and put them up permanently.
Yeah, I mean, Starmer's new system he's got there is kind of ridiculous, isn't it? They're coming from France, which is a safe country anyway. So yeah, like you say, why can't you just take those boats straight back, those people straight back there? It just seems yeah, beyond me. It seems a very simple problem. But Nigel Farage is capitalizing on that because, he's got the simple solution and everybody can understand it, but the current government just won't do it, so that's why he's becoming so popular, I feel.
So, well, when the Maoris take over, it looks like you'll be out on your ear, doesn't it?
Well, maybe. But I don't think that's ever going to happen, to be honest. It could happen in the future. I mean, right now the law is that they can't give back any private property. They can only give back land which is owned by the crown. And my theory about that is, they're handing over large chunks of unproductive land back to some of these Maori tribes. And they're taking it off the crown's hands, and those Maoris have to pay probably some taxes on that land. So in some ways it's quite a smart move by the government, maybe. But yeah, so yeah, but who knows in the future, like the Maori, party in New Zealand is growing in power massively at the moment because obviously we've got this sort of right-wing government here, and they were trying to alter the Treaty of Waitangi, and that increased the Maori party's participation and subscription no end. So yeah, who knows what's in the future? You could pass a law in the future if the Maoris really get some strong power in government, where they could take private property away from farmers or whatever, a bit like what's happening in South Africa, according to Donald Trump.
Do you want to just finish though on the farmers? Because obviously there's a similar thing happening, as some people will know, in New Zealand to in the UK, where the big people like BlackRock are trying to snap up these distressed assets as farmers are asked to pay all sorts of new taxes, including inheritance tax, if they try and pass the farm on through the family.
Yeah, well, our Prime Minister Chris Luxon, not only is he a sort of evangelical Christian, he's obviously spent a lot of time in America working for big corporations. Unilever is where he spent most of his career. He was a director there over in North America, and I think it's you had an interview not too long ago with, I think it's Haiku, who was saying that Unilever is one of those companies who were sponsoring the green agenda protest movements back in the 90s or so. And obviously we've introduced the carbon capture scheme under Chris Luxon. He's very keen on it. A lot of the farmers are going broke. They've got this carbon capture scheme where you can get paid from the government if you plant trees on your farm. Some farmers are just going over and planting forests. Others are selling up to people like BlackRock, and BlackRock are planting massive forestry blocks. So New Zealand's turning into one big forest, and you can make a lot of money. The government will actually pay you to convert your farm into a forest. So, yeah, it seems a very strange situation, and that could be what in the UK is going to be going on soon. When farmers can't pay inheritance tax, maybe they will be selling to big corporations or whoever, and they will have some kind of similar scheme, so that could be down the road in the UK there.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you've got this right-wing government. Normally, the right-wing governments protect the farmers and the property owners. It seems like everything is, all the expectations have been thrown out the window. Anyway, look, Andy, as I always ask you at the end, I wonder if you could just give listeners a bit of a tip as to how to find and follow you on social media, but also some podcast tips, places to get some decent information in this crazy world of ours.
Yeah, well, I think definitely look up Al Jazeera's documentary series on boycott, and it's about the boycott law in America, but it's got some interesting stuff about Israel and different things there. And yeah, if you wanna hear me, I guess you better listen to your show.
All right, Andy Gordon, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.